the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Here we are, and everybody knows it. We are hours away from a by-election. The midterm election's coming tomorrow, and by, well, if not this time tomorrow night, then hours thereafter, we're going to know the shape of the American Congress looking into the future. And, of course, there are larger issues here as well. I am certain that most Americans are ready for this to be over. I'm furthermore absolutely emphatically certain that the candidates are ready for this to be over, because this is one of those reminders to us that democracy is a very demanding form of government. If we were living under an autocracy, under a monarchy or a dictatorship, we wouldn't have to worry about all the political messages that we have to sift through and try to understand. We wouldn't have to worry about making an intelligent decision about voting. But democracy makes demands on us, and that becomes especially clear in these final days and now final hours leading up to an election. We're going to be talking about that today with a specific focus upon the U.S. News and World Report cover story that, it's Newsweek, having to do with whether or not evangelicals are going to vote. And by the way, all three of the major news magazines have cover stories we're talking about this week. And we're going to be talking about all three of them in turn. But we're looking at Newsweek right now and its story, which basically comes down to whether or not evangelicals are going to vote or not. Now, I have to say, as I listen to the conversation out there, I am not certain exactly how one would answer for evangelicals. And so we're going to do something a little unique today. I want you to speak on your own behalf. I want you to speak to Newsweek and to all the major news networks and anyone else listening by the medium of this program about your intentions for tomorrow. And I want to speak as Christians, and I want us to give the reason why. I think it's very important. I want to know just how important is this to you, what factors into your mind right now. You know, here are the kinds of things that are being said. The kinds of things being said is that, for instance, evangelicals are just out of sorts with the Republican Party, and even though there has been a value alignment, evangelicals are now not going to be turning out in major numbers to vote. The argument is, after the Foley scandal, there's a disenchantment with the Republican Party, and so evangelicals aren't going to get out to vote. There is the suggestion that evangelicals are now perhaps a more diverse movement in terms of voting patterns, and that it's not a partisan alignment now, or even a values alignment on issues of, for instance, abortion and euthanasia and sexuality issues, but now evangelicals have a broader list of concerns. And that's the Newsweek issue, and that's why we're focusing on that cover story. It's because Newsweek puts it this way. They say there is an identity crisis for evangelicalism, and the issue is whether, and I'm going to, this is a quotation, it is a war between the religious right and believers who want to go broader, whether evangelicalism will have what they call a narrow political values, moral agenda, or a broader agenda. My frustration with that is that when most people use the word broader, what they mean is actually a substitution. They don't mean I want to add to abortion and concerns with abortion, euthanasia, and sexuality issues, other issues. They mean I want to replace those issues with something else. That's what we're going to be talking about today. How does that factor into your voting? And, I would really like to hear people speak on principle, based upon your Christian worldview, what is it you plan to do? I don't mean for whom do you plan to vote. I do not mean that question. I mean, how are you making your decision about voting patterns, whether to vote, how to vote, and all the rest? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be looking at the Newsweek cover story, but more importantly, we're going to be turning to you for a conversation on this issue. First review of issues in the news, the biggest news over the weekend, and were we not facing the midterm election tomorrow, the big news everywhere would be the death sentence handed down in an Iraqi court against Saddam Hussein. Now, the death sentence is death by hanging, but it is automatically appealed. And, of course, an awful lot of the news accounts having to do with this are looking right away to what's the effect on the ground. What will happen if Saddam is executed? What has already happened now that he's been convicted? I don't want to speak so much about the pragmatics of what's going to happen on the ground. I don't want to speak about the strategic question of when might it be most advantageous to bring this sentence to its completion. I want to talk about the fact that we have here a very precious opportunity to make a statement for justice. How many times throughout human history do we look back and say, if only that man had been brought to justice? At the end of World War II, there was the awful sense of being morally robbed when Adolf Hitler committed suicide in that bunker in Berlin. Many, many times throughout human history, you look back and you see someone who committed genocide, mass murder, who tortured, and all the rest, and you say, if only that man could have been brought to justice. Well, now we have that opportunity. Is justice always clean and antiseptic and perfect? No. We are fallible human beings. And there is no doubt that there were all kinds of things happening during this trial that sometimes just looked downright chaotic. But in the bottom line, justice requires that the right thing be done. Now, one of my concerns about this sentence is that it just isn't yet enough. Because after all, Saddam Hussein should not be facing justice just for the something like 147 killed in the Jibril massacre. Rather, it should be a matter of the entirety of his reign, his tyranny, his genocide, and his murderous and torturous oppression of his own people. A couple of other things I want to bring to your attention here in the United States of America. The Episcopal Church USA now has as its presiding bishop, Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey. She is the first woman to hold that position, and on the 4th of November, she was invested in a ceremony in the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. Now, her sermon is a masterpiece of avoiding saying anything that is distinctively Christian. I mean, it is almost as if it is a piece of art in an effort to avoid saying anything that would point to the heart of the Christian gospel. Instead, it's almost all about politics. She says this, you and I have been invited into that ministry of global peacemaking that makes a place and affirms a welcome for all of God's creatures. But more than welcome, that ministry invites all to feast until they are filled with God's abundance. You know, where is the cross? Where is the gospel? Why did Christ come? In order that we could feast upon peace abundance? She says this, all are welcome, all are fed, all are satisfied, all are healed of the wounds and lessenings that are part of the world not yetness of creation. It says here, this church has said that our larger vision will be framed and shaped in coming years by the vision of shalom embedded in Millennium Development Goals. That's that's like United Nations. A world where the hungry are fed, the ill are healed, the young educated, children and men, women and men treated equally, and where all have access to clean water and adequate sanitation. Now, my guess is that is the very first time. Matter of fact, I think I can almost say without fear of any contradiction, that is the first time that sanitation has been mentioned as a major goal in the investiture of an American denominational leader. By the way, in the transcript, it says right after that paragraph, applause. We're all for sanitation. She goes on speaking about her concerns. She says, the health of our neighbors, in its broadest understanding, is the mission that God has given us. Well, mission's good. She's heading in a good direction here. Maybe. We cannot love God if we fail to love our neighbors into a more whole and holy state of life. If some in this church feel wounded by recent decisions, then our salvation, our health as a body, is at some hazard, and it becomes the duty of all of us to seek healing and wholeness. Well, again, you start looking at these words and you say, what in the world does this mean? This means she's going to continue to press her agenda of the normalization of homosexual behavior, the blessing of homosexual unions, and the election of a homosexual bishop. She supported the election of Gene Robinson as the Bishop of New Hampshire. What will be the response in the church? Well, you don't have to wait long in order to find out. On Saturday, the Episcopalian Diocese of Pittsburgh reported that it had voted the previous day in favor of withdrawing from the national church. In other words, the day before that event, they got ahead in order to say they were going to request alternative oversight. That vote came a day before the new presiding bishop for the church was installed. The vote, by the way, came 214-54, overwhelming, in favor of the resolution to withdraw from the ECUSA, ECUSA, the Episcopal Church USA, and to ask for alternative oversight. Folks, we're looking at a major breach, a schism in this church. It's not a pretty thing to see, but I have to say I respect those who, for the cause of truth, are willing to leave the comfort and the familiarity of a denominational structure they've known for a very long time, because it simply has come to the point where they cannot stay with integrity. And this is not the only diocese to take this action, but it is the most recent. Tomorrow, there are a lot of things on the ballot, but in the state of Missouri, for instance, there is a major initiative having to do with human cloning. New Scientist Journal says this. They say that biologists who want to press for embryo research and human cloning say that instead of using therapeutic cloning, change the vocabulary to somatic cell nuclear transfer. What they're finding here is that when they change the vocabulary, they're not changing what they're doing, they're just changing the vocabulary. People support it by much larger numbers. The support level in one poll raised from 29% to 46%. In other words, this is propaganda all over again, and that's what's happening in the state of Missouri. Folks, it is human cloning. Time and time again, I've heard the talking heads on the television who support the initiative to try to liberalize the laws there say, no, it's really not cloning, it's just embryo research. Well, folks, it's the same technology. You clone the embryo, and nothing is different in that process if you went on to clone a human being. We'll be right back to talk about Evangelicals, Politics, Newsweek, and your plans for tomorrow. Coast to Coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The cover of Newsweek magazine, The Politics of Jesus, sits a cross wrapped in an American flag. And yes, there's something just naturally not right about that. It's a piece of shock art. And nonetheless, they're trying to make a point. They actually have two articles up. One is by Mark Gerson, former former speechwriter for President George W. Bush, and he's writing about what he suggests is a new list of evangelical concerns. I didn't find that all that interesting, but the cover story is. It's by Lisa Miller. This is what she has to say. She says, for the first time in a long while, then, there's a serious rethinking of the politics of Jesus in America, or at least the efforts of different elements in the country, from believers of progressive, moderate, and conservative bents to claim they're acting in his name in the public sphere. But her big point in this article is to point to a couple of evangelical figures. She points to Dr. James Dobson as representing the right, and then she points to a pastor of another evangelical church and says that there are those who want to press for a broader agenda. She says there's a holy war between the religious right and believers who want to go broader. Now, I hear this all the time now. This is the incessant beat of the national media. And if there's anything new about this midterm election, it is this particular angle from the media. I want to know where you are on this, because here's what they're saying about evangelicals. They're saying that evangelicals are more diverse than were known before, and actually not all have these concerns about abortion and homosexuality and other issues. And there are those who are more interested in poverty and social justice and all the rest. Well, again, is this a broadening or is this a replacement? That's a crucial issue here. The other thing they're saying is that the recent scandals related to Mark Foley and the scandal related even to Ted Haggard and his resignation as a pastor in Colorado, all this is affecting voters. I can't believe that the resignation of Ted Haggard in Colorado has anything to do with someone deciding a vote in Virginia. But if it's so, I want to hear from you, so you can tell me. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We received an email from Roger in Tallahassee, who says he's listening on the Internet. He's already carried out his absentee vote. He says, so for me, I carried out my civic and especially my Christian duty to vote in our form of government. I urge those who can go ahead to vote definitely. One word from Tallahassee. What's your word? The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, where Jim's on the line, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing? My personal opinion is that the first thing you have to vote for, first and foremost, is how Scripture stands on abortion. And that's that. My personal opinion, that's that very, very clearly stated, in that that life does begin at conception, because John the Baptist leapt for joy in his womb at the presence of Mary, knowing full well, therefore proving that there's a consciousness. If you are a biblical Christian and you do believe in that the Bible is the Word of God, and you that is the first thing.
Okay, Jim.
First you have to look at.
Yeah, Jim, and I sympathize with that very, very much. So I guess what I'm asking you is, do you have a big torturous moral question when you go into the voting booth tomorrow, or are things pretty clear to you?
Things are clear to me. I I studied. I read my Bible. I looked at issues. Economics doesn't play that large a point to me. Well, number one, because I'm blessed, and I have a good job. I voted as well by absentee ballot before I left on this business trip. But, you know, some of those things might be closer to home for some Christians, but they've got to, it's just like with tithing. Unless you trust the Lord with your finances, you cut him off at every opportunity to bless you.
So for you, the life issues are paramount. I appreciate you making that point, Jim. It's good to hear from you. Let's go to Evansville, Indiana, where Brandon's on the line, listening on XM. Go ahead, Brandon.
Yes, sir. I'm a long time voting Republican, and I've always voted on the issues of abortion and gay marriage. And it seems that every time I vote on those issues, because they bring those issues up, I vote them in, and they don't seem to get anything done. And like we have 6 years of the Republicans controlling everything, and we're still talking about the same issue. And then President Bush favors the morning after pill, and I'm just really confused at what I need to do in the voting booth tomorrow, because it seems every time I vote Republican, they don't do what I want them to do.
Yeah, well, my goal here is not to get you to vote Republican, is to get us to think Christianly. So let's think about this for just a moment. If abortion is a paramount issue, and I believe it should be, life issues, not just abortion, but euthanasia and all the rest, and if the sexuality issues are very important issues as we decide how this society is going to order itself sexually and in terms of marriage, then, you know, I'll share your frustration, Brandon. I share your frustration that over 30 years after the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973 is still the law of the land. I share that frustration. I share your frustration that the morning after pill, the emergency contraceptive is legalized. I share your outrage and concern about that. I share your outrage about the continuation of our debate over the issue of same-sex marriage because we have no federal marriage amendment. And yet, Brandon, I want to come back and just suggest that one of the things we have to deal with in terms of a Christian understanding of politics is that in a fallen world, it never works out perfectly. In other words, it's never a slam dunk because we're reaching for hearts, not just for votes. And this is a progressive recovery. I mean, remember that it appeared that the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973 caught everyone off guard, and yet there wasn't enough of an outcry immediately from the American people to force politicians to lead to reverse that. In other words, we're having to educate and mobilize as we go along on these issues. And so, Brandon, you know, just rewrite history a little bit. Let me invite you to think about this. And again, I'm not speaking here as a partisan for any party, because if you felt the other way, in other words, if you were calling saying, I believe in abortion, I want abortion rights to be protected and extended and all the rest, I'm for same-sex marriage, I think you'd have the same moral calculation to make here. And that is, where would we be if in the last 6 years you'd had a president in office who was appointing judges who would push those agendas and who was setting down executive orders? I mean, I well remember January of 1993. That's a long time ago now, but I was in Washington, D.C., and I was speaking at a pro-life event on the 20th anniversary of Roe v. Wade when the newly inaugurated president, Bill Clinton, January of 1993, set down a set of executive orders liberalizing abortion and turning back an awful lot of the policy of the United States government that had helped to curtail abortions during the Reagan administration. So who's in office really does matter. Am I frustrated that we don't have more progress? Yeah, Brandon, I am. But I just have to say, for crying out loud, if these are really the issues about which you care, you can't vote for the person who would do the opposite of where your convictions lie. Does that make any sense, Brandon?
But I guess what I was thinking about is not even voting at all, because I can't vote for Democrat because I know they would try to do these issues, but then I couldn't vote for Republican because they're not even doing it, even if I elect them.
Well, again, you know, I'd have to say they're not doing enough. I agree with you. But on the other hand, you know, and when they say they're not doing enough, I tell you, the people who disappoint me are, for instance, the Republicans in the Senate, who got together as part of the Gang of 14 and did not change the rules so that we could get some of the people we need on the courts. But I still have to go back and say, I look at some of the outstanding people put on the courts. I look at John Roberts as Chief Justice. I look at Samuel Alito as the new Associate Justice. This week at the Supreme Court, the partial birth abortion case is back. And I have to tell you, I think it makes a huge difference to know that this time you're going to have Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito as a part of the hearing of that case. Does that mean it's a slam dunk and we're going to win? Well, only time tells. But we are in a different position than we would be if, for instance, we had a Chief Justice appointed by a President Kerry or a President Gore. You know, and just imagine, if you care about these issues legislatively, you know, we have been lulled, those of us who care about these issues, we've been lulled into some complacency by having a majority party in place that at least articulated agreement with us. A lot of folks who are in voting age today who don't remember what it's like to face opposition every day from a different majority. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. To call, the number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear about your plans for tomorrow. Not so much in terms of your partisan plans, in terms of your Christian plans. I want to know how your Christian conviction is playing into this. I guess I want to come back to Brandon's call and just say, as carefully and as clearly as I can, that I don't get, I can't even connect to this I'm not going to vote argument. You know, I guess I have to think, even before I get to this election and the meaning of what happens tomorrow, I have to get to the fact that there are people who would give their lives to have the opportunity to make that vote. There are people who have given their lives in order that we would have the opportunity to make that vote. There are people who put their lives on the line to establish this system of Republican and that small r, constitutional Republican Democratic government, in order that we would have that right. There are people around the world who've never known that right. And not voting means, well, it's not, see, that is not making a moral statement that you're not a part of the political process. It is a part of the political process. And see, that's one of the interesting things about living in a constitutional republic like this. Every vote counts, including the vote that doesn't get made. It just counts on the wrong side. And when you think about that, you try to withdraw from the political process, what are you doing? You're handing it over. You're delivering it over. And because of that, you know, we also have to have, I think, a recalibrated evangelical expectation of politics. We are not electing, you know, the answer to all of our problems. That is never going to happen. We are never going to elect someone who's going to be the answer to all of our problems. This is a fallible process. We're all fallible, sinful, finite human beings. And the political process is an ongoing process of negotiation and compromise. And you just have to know that. And it's the worst system of government imaginable, to take Winston Churchill out of context, except all the others previously tried. It's better than all the rest and far superior to it. And as Christians, I believe we have a moral responsibility to vote because, again, it's not like not voting means we're not making a moral choice in the midst of this political process. Think of it this way. If you're not voting, you might as well be a convicted felon who's denied the vote. If you're not voting, you might as well be a person with unclear immigration status who can't vote. If you're not voting, you must be like someone who would throw away a very important responsibility. And, you know, when we vote, we're not voting saying, I believe that I agree with this person on every issue. I agree with this party on every issue. And I can absolutely count that this party is never going to compromise on that issue under any circumstances. No, we're saying that when it comes to a careful analysis of political engagement, my Christian conviction compels me to choose these issues as the primary framework for my voting decision, and I'm going to have to consistently vote and consistently hold those candidates and whatever party accountable to those principles. But we're the people who have to stay in this for the long haul. The big question is, are we? And, you know, right after, for instance, the Reagan years, there was all this about evangelical Christians giving up on the political process and not voting. And then, you know, right after 1992 and Bill Clinton's election, the same kind of thing. And then you just hear it over and over again. I don't believe it, but I think it's important that we talk about it. Let's go to Jennifer calling from Bristol, Virginia, listening on WHCB. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yes, I've read a lot on the Internet and in the paper about all this brouhaha with Mark Foley and the scandal and also the thing with Chet Hagerty. And a lot of people in the media are saying, well, this is going to affect the response of evangelicals or cause them not to respond at all. And I just don't agree with that. I think that intelligent Christians will realize that these were men and they were fallible and they fell, and because of sin, and that the head of the church is Christ, and they're going to follow their convictions and vote for people. That's my decision. I'm going to vote for candidates, even though I may not agree with everything they do, but whose policies support the philosophies put forth by Christ, that life is sacred and marriage is sacred. And the candidates who forward that philosophy, I'm going to vote for.
Thanks for your call, Jennifer. It's good to hear from you and good to hear from Bristol, Virginia. You know, this reminds me to come back and say, you know, let's just take Jennifer's point here. She says right up front, she mentioned issues like abortion and sexuality, marriage, as being the primary framework. Now, I'd want to say to Jennifer, I would say this to myself and to all of us. Do we need a broader political agenda than that? You bet. You bet we do. We'll give an answer for our engagement on issues like justice and economics and taxation and all the rest. But at the end of the day, every sane person knows that you have to have some kind of hierarchy of which issues are more important than others. And the fact is, we could have a perfectly just tax code, but if we're killing babies in the womb, that is a prior issue. And for me, we've got to get there first. I don't believe that this society, as a society, can regain any kind of moral sanity so long as we continue along the line of the culture of death and the destruction of marriage. Some things are simply fundamental. To call 877-893-8255. Join us. Lots of callers trying to get through. You can join them with just calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You can also go to the website at albertmohler.com and send us a message that way. Let's go to Pam, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Pam.
Yes, I want to make this just real short and sweet, because basically I'm referring to the caller that called in that said didn't want to vote at all, and I just am very disappointed in evangelical Christians, because basically by not voting, you are casting a vote for the opposition. And that is what they have to really think hard about, and that's not what we want.
Well said, Pam. I appreciate that. It's a failure of a stewardship, and that itself is a very, very significant issue. That's not to say that it's always easy to walk into the polling place. I mean, there are people in various places who are going to be looking at candidates saying, you know, I'm not sure about this person on issue X, that person on issue Y. You better figure out what's most important to you and deal with that as the first and primary issue. Thanks for your call, Pam. Let's go to Matt calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Matt.
Hello, Dr. Mueller. I'm a conservative Christian, and I will be voting pretty much Republican all the way through on the elections and stuff like that, and trying to go for conservative judges. But I do have this one thing that concerns me, and that's that right now we have won the majority party with the Republican Party, and yet we have the entire other Democratic National Party is against us. And it feels like if the Republican Party does not want to go with us on issues like, let's say, the marriage amendment, then our hands are just tied behind our backs, because they're just going to say to us, what are you going to do, go to the Democrats? And so, you know, I'm totally for right now in this election series, you know, going for conservative candidates. But the question is, you know, how are we going to be able to keep the majority party accountable to us?
Well, that's a big question. How do you keep any politician accountable to you? You know, that's why the primary election process is so important. And we need to realize that these candidates just didn't sign up for these races. They earned the right to be on this ballot by a primary election. And so this, we have to go to a prior question, don't we, Matt? And that is that either some candidates aren't running that ought to be running, or you have some people not voting that ought to be voting in the primary system. Because if we really put ourselves into this in terms of understanding the stewardship, we'd have to go and figure out, all right, you know, who should be running? What kind of citizen statesman ought to be running for office this next time? How do we get that person to run? And then how do we support that person? And if the incumbent, even if it's an incumbent of a party we support, isn't what we want, then we need to get someone in there who is what we want. It's a complicated question. I mean, even the question of the majority, the voting majority in the House and in the Senate, you know, that raises all kinds of excruciating issues for people. You know, do I vote for someone just because that person's a Republican so that I get a Republican majority here? Boy, that's a huge, huge question. And it's a question that I don't know exactly what I would do in Rhode Island if I had to vote for Lincoln Chafee in order to say that I support him. But of course, when you're dealing with the Senate, especially, it's not just a local issue. It's not just a state issue. It's a national issue. And so your stewardship is not just to vote in your voting booth in your community. It's to vote as a citizen in the United States of America. And even as what takes place tomorrow is the election of every single member of the House of Representatives and about a third of the Senate, along with some states, governors and other initiatives and all the rest, it still is a national election in terms of the meaning and the impact of the vote that takes place tomorrow. Okay, let's go to Fairview, North Carolina, where Terry's on the line, listening on WFGW. Go ahead, Terry.
Yes, Dr. Bowler, thanks for taking my call. I just want to say right quick that it's the obligation of every Christian, every American, to vote. But what I want, the point I want to make, and this happened maybe in 94 when the Republican takeover took place, we can't elect those people and then lay down and expect them to do the job. We have to stay involved. We have to write them. We have to call them. We have to encourage them. And that's really, I had a lot more to say, but that's the main point I wanted to make.
Well, that was a lot to say, Terry. It really was, because staying involved is a major part of the message. Political engagement, a mature evangelical political engagement, doesn't happen in November every 2 years. It has to be a more consistent a consistent system and pattern of being informed and a consistent pattern of being involved. And that is a major point to make. You said a lot in a few words there, and I appreciate it. Let's go to Paul calling from Floyd's Knobs, Indiana. Go ahead, Paul.
Dr. Moeller, just a point I wanted to make is that the way I look at politics and voting is not the seeking the ideal candidate. It's choosing between two less than ideal choices. And if you want your voice heard, ultimately you have to vote. And I appreciate your show.
Well, I appreciate that point. You know, there are those who have identified politics as the art of the possible. That's an aphorism that's often cited about politics. And that can be a rather cynical axiom, because that sounds like it's just a matter of dealing with what you got. You can't hope for any better. But, you know, when you're talking about the art of the possible, that's in the context of changing the possibilities. Every election is a reshaping of the political equation, and we as a people have to take responsibility for our part in that reshaping. And that's why when I think about the question, will evangelicals vote, I have to come back and say, how can we give an answer for allowing that process to be reshaped and just be mere observers in this? Because in so doing, we're actually giving over our vote to someone else, and that's just the way it works. You know, folks, when we're thinking about our political responsibility, we've had several suggestions made today. And one of my struggles on this program is that I primarily do not want to talk about politics. Politics is a part of our Christian responsibility, but, you know, the rest of the radio world and an awful lot of the call-in shows and news shows are talking about politics all the time. And, you know, I'll just leave that to them. And you can go to an awful lot of really good programs to get very important information. I'm thinking my friend Hugh Hewitt and others who have radio programs attuned to this. You know, in the morning, Bill Bennett and others, Bill Bennett's Morning in America, you got all kinds of programs like that that really cover these issues. I want to go to the deeper level every time I possibly have the opportunity and ask the fundamental question, who are we? If we are Christians, what difference does that make in the way we think? When we come to this, we simply can't look at spreadsheets, blue and red states, and all the rest. We know that's important, but we know that what is more important is an understanding of the political process and our responsibility. You know, if we are Christians, we have to come at this with an understanding that humanity is sinful. And that includes the people who vote and the people who are elected. We have to understand that in a sinful world, we have to expect that people will fall short of our expectations, and we have to expect that some level of compromise will be necessary. How much compromise can you tolerate? Well, just imagine a world in which we did not have this vote, we did not have this political process, and you are waiting to wake up tomorrow to find out what kind of government you were under, monarchy, despotism, dictatorship, or whatever. And at the end of the day, we'll give an answer for what we do. Well, time is running out on us here, but quickly I want to go to Marvin, who's calling in. Marvin, we're glad to have you. Go right ahead.
Just two comments. One, the term evangelical is being redefined by our media. Just everyone who calls himself a Christian is not an evangelical. The other comment I have to make is tomorrow I'm faced with an election of two pro-abortion candidates, one Republican, one Democrat. I'll be voting third party or write-in as a protest vote to the Republican Party that they need to send us pro-life candidates or they cannot expect my vote.
Okay, thanks for the call, Marvin. And I don't have a word from the Lord on you there. In other words, I don't have a specific answer to say that what you're suggesting is right or wrong. First of all, I'd say I respect that a lot more than not voting. I can tell you that. But here's my concern, just something to think about. The submitted for your consideration. In a parliamentary system of government, every vote counts. So if you vote for a minor party and you know the party's not going to get a majority, you're still in the political equation because the party that does get a majority is going to have to deal with you. And so you still have some political leverage. The problem in our system of government, which is not parliamentary, is that a vote for a third party candidate or a vote for an independent candidate that doesn't have any hope of winning is basically just opting out of the process. And so that's just something to think about. If we were in Great Britain or Israel or another nation with a parliamentary system of government, yeah, your kind of protest vote will still count because they're going to have to deal with you. You may get only 13 seats in the Knesset, but the Likud party is going to have to deal with you. In this particular system of government, our constitutional republic, it just doesn't work that way. Great conversation today, folks. We're talking about things that matter. By the way, we got some emails coming in, just a couple here. Got an email from Craig saying that he certainly voted. He thinks it's important. He said, let's not sit this one out. There's too much to lose. Also from Tama, writing in to say that she also voted. And, in fact, she and her husband voted early last week. And that's another interesting phenomenon around the country is people are voting early. Folks, I'm always hesitant to take on an issue like this because the political dimension is never ultimate, but it is so important. And on the night before an election, it's just really important that we talk about these things. Let me tell you what I fear. I fear an awful lot of evangelicals who a few days from now are beginning to feel guilty that they did not exercise their stewardship. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that this conversation is at least a part of encouraging us all to do what we need to do. Let's think through our priorities, not only in politics, but in all of life. And let's bring the full strength of our Christian conviction to everything we do. The art of the possible, yes, but still, in order that we can give an answer to God for the stewardship of this gift we have been given. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.